Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as the world knows, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas is proceeding with plans to seek statehood, nationhood, through the United Nations over U.S. and Israeli objections. He is expected to submit an application for membership, as it's called, on Friday. But how does this really work? Can the United Nations create a country? Maybe it's time to refresh our fourth grade civics class knowledge of the workings of the United Nations. And so joining me now to talk about the procedural side of this vote is David Bosco, who writes the Multilateralist blog for Foreign Policy Magazine. He's a former international litigator, now an assistant professor at the American University School of International Service, and he wrote the book Five to Rule Them All, the UN Security Council and the Making of the Modern World. Welcome back to WNYC, David Bosco.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
So we've talked about the diplomatic and political side of this move, bypassing negotiations with Israel in favor of going to the UN on previous shows. But how will they do this? How does a country go about getting recognized as a country by the UN?
Right. And as you said, the terminology matters a little bit here. It's actually membership in the UN that they're seeking. Statehood itself is something that's really determined bilaterally. One state recognizes another or doesn't. So formally, what they're seeking here is membership in the UN. And what the UN Charter says about that is that in order to be admitted, a member has to be a peace-loving state and has to be recommended by the Security Council and then approved by the General Assembly. And so what the Palestinians, by all accounts, are about to do is to submit a formal request for membership, and I think technically that goes to the Secretary General, who then passes it to the Security Council. Security Council then decides what to do with it, and then it would go to the General Assembly.
Do the Palestinians choose whether to submit this to the Security Council or the General Assembly, or can they try both at the same time?
Well, in order to gain membership, it's pretty clear from the Charter and also from past precedent that you've got to have the Security Council's support. So I don't think there's not really an option of going to the General Assembly and without the Security Council and getting membership. Now, they could go to the General Assembly if they wanted for something other than membership, for a resolution supporting membership or calling on the Security Council to grant to support membership, or maybe for a change in Palestine's current status, which is as an entity that's an observer. But in order to get the whole enchilada, you've got to go to the Security Council.
So, listeners, if you have any questions about how this would work, you can give us a call right now. This is not a segment where we are going to debate who's right in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. We'll get those calls anyway, I guarantee it, David.
Right.
We just won't take them. But 212-433-WNYC. Let's not relitigate the Middle East conflict. But I think it's really interesting to find out how this would actually work and how either side can kind of wage politics for or against. We'll get into some of that with respect to the UN Security Council or General Assembly. So if you have your questions on how a country would get statehood at the United Nations and what it actually means, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, for David Bosco, author of Five to Rule Them All, the UN Security Council and the Making of the Modern World.
And Brian, I might just say one thing about the on the Security Council. Of course, the veto power applies here. And so, you know, the United States has said up and down that it's not going to let this go through.
Right.
But an important question for the Palestinians is whether they can get 9 votes on the council in support, because you need 9 votes to have a resolution passed and to force a U.S. veto. And so if they don't get those 9 votes, the resolution would fail, and you wouldn't even have to use a U.S. veto.
So let's use that as an excuse to do a little refresher on Security Council 101.
Right.
There are these five in your book title, Five to Rule Them All, 5 permanent members of the United Nations Security Council who do have veto power over any question that comes before them, right?
That's right. Any substantive question, they have veto power.
The U.S.
the U.S., we've got the U.K., France, Russia, and China.
Sounds like a perfect five for 1948.
Exactly.
And so what do we call this? Is this a democracy?
As you say, you know, it was created in the closing days of World War II.
And the beginning of the Cold War, with that in mind.
Beginning of the Cold War. And so you had the three main Allied powers, and then you had France and China, and interestingly, Britain was the big supporter of having France get a permanent seat, and the U.S. was the big supporter of getting China a permanent seat. Of course, they were talking about nationalist China then. So that's how you got the five, and it's never been changed. It's never been changed. You've had a little bit of shuffling in the sense that communist China replaced nationalist China, the Russian Federation replaced the Soviet Union, but the five have been constant. And then you've got the other players on the Security Council who are rotating members, 10 rotating members. And they're going to play an important role here because it's not just the veto power. It's also a question of whether you can get those nine votes.
Right. And then you have and of course, you know, we've done segments on this. India, for example,
sure.
With a billion of the world's 6 billion people saying, oh, me, we deserve a veto now
right.
In the modern world. Brazil, other countries that have a lot of people in our regional powers saying, why do France and the UK get to veto everything that may be in our interest for the rest of time? So that's the Security Council. And then what about the General Assembly? What is the General Assembly?
The General Assembly is, in essence, the part of the UN that's one vote for every member state. So every member state, which is 193 now, almost every state in the world.
We should have a listener contest. How many of the 193 nations that are members in the United Nations can you name?
Yeah, I don't want to take that. But I do know that South Sudan was the last the most recent member state. So we're up to 193. There in the General Assembly, the Palestinians, I think, feel much more confident because they've got there's no veto power. They've got a lot of support. You know, the African states, the Asian states, good chunks of Europe are likely to support them. So that's a much friendlier environment for the Palestinians, and they can pretty much count on getting, as they have many times in the past, a resolution supportive of them, broadly speaking, from the General Assembly.
193 is, shall we say, a lot of countries?
Yes.
Are there any countries not in the United Nations General Assembly?
Well, there have been a couple. So Kosovo, for example, would be one that, you can debate about whether it's an independent state, but in many respects it functions as an independent state. It's not a member. Taiwan is not a member. And in the past, you've had a couple of other states who are not members because they've chosen to not be members. For example, Switzerland, for many years, chose not to be a member because it wanted to preserve its neutrality, and it thought that being a member of the UN might compromise that.
And is the General Assembly supposed to be a democracy, like a global legislature?
Well, that's a democracy is a strong word to use when you talk about the General Assembly, but it's certainly supposed to be the more egalitarian branch, I suppose, where every state is equal, and the big powers don't have any special prerogatives or special say.
So it's like the Senate in that way, right? The United States Senate has two voting members from each state,
right.
Whether you're California or Rhode Island.
That's right. That's right. And that, of course, drives, has often driven the United States crazy because the U.S. pays, 25-some% of the U.N. budget. But when it comes down to budget questions, which are usually decided by the General Assembly, they have only one vote.
Now, what would the Palestinians get by Security Council recognition that they wouldn't get by General Assembly recognition?
They'd get full membership in the U.N., so they would be a full member of the organization.
And again, you said that doesn't make them a nation. Didn't Israel get created as a nation by being recognized by the United Nations?
Well, Israel entered as a United Nations member back in the 1940s, and that was an interesting period, obviously. Actually, it was quite interesting in the Cold War because both the United States and the Soviet Union were very supportive of Israel at that point. That, of course, changed later with the Soviets. But
is it inaccurate to say the United Nations created Israel?
you know, it's almost like a theological debate, because when you talk about statehood, you know, there are certain objective criteria for statehood that are laid down in, you know, various international treaties. And so statehood, and, you know, Ban Ki-moon will say this again and again, that's a matter for individual states to determine what, you know, who they recognize as a state. What the UN decides is membership in the organization. But no, I think given the whole history of the of Israel, it's not inaccurate in broad terms to say that the United Nations created Israel.
James in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, James.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I heard that the Palestinians can go to the General Assembly and petition the International Criminal Court to challenge their de facto Israeli military occupation. I'd like to ask the professor by what mechanism can they do that?
Right.
Right. That's an important question, because even if they only get given this member, or what would it be called, adjunct, non-state
observer, they'd be, what they could get from the General Assembly is elevation from their current status to the status of non-member state observer.
But that gives them the right to try to pursue Israel in the International Criminal Court?
Well, here's the caller is onto something really important here. And if you talk to, you know, listen to Israeli sources on this, they'll say that this is actually one of their big concerns. It's not so much the UN itself, but what does this mean for other international organizations? The International Criminal Court is a separate organization with a separate membership. The Palestinians have already submitted to the ICC a declaration that says, we give you the right to investigate any crimes committed on our territory. So they've already told the ICC that. Now, the prosecutor of the ICC and the ICC generally are essentially sitting on that. And they are kind of waiting to decide how to handle that. And I think what some people are suggesting is that if there's a big, broad support in the General Assembly, then that would bolster the case that the ICC should consider Palestine a state and should, you know, perhaps open an investigation into any alleged crimes that have been committed on its territory. But it's not as if there's something formal that kicks in. It's just that it kind of changes that dynamic from the court's perspective.
Christian in Newark, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hi, good morning, both of you. My question has to do with what happens if or when this vote comes up or down? What happens in these two countries, Israel and, you know, these occupied territories? What will the political ramifications be if, say, Palestine doesn't get this recognition? And won't that, I mean, they're all fighting very hard and trying to make this happen. And when it doesn't happen, isn't that going to be, like, very negative for the relations between these two?
Well, thank you, Christian. And let me broaden that question to you. And we're almost out of time, David. But
yeah.
Whether the Palestinians, if we assume that Security Council member state recognition or membership in the UN recognition is not going to happen because
right.
the U.S. would veto it.
Right.
What changes in the relationship between the Palestinians and the Israelis toward a larger settlement of their dispute?
Yeah.
If they get the observer status from the General Assembly, or if they don't?
Right. That's a great question. And really, as a practical matter, nothing changes. You've got a general, you know, their status at the UN has changed somewhat. But practically, that has no real implications. The question is, does it change the broad political dynamic in that the General Assembly has offered this support to Palestine? Does that give them a leg up in terms of negotiations? Some people worry that it may also, you know, create events on the ground in terms of protests and you know, possible riots and that kind of thing. But it doesn't change anything, you know, in a formal sense as between the Israelis and the Palestinians.
And we leave it there. And I think everybody knows a lot more than they did 15 minutes ago about how the United Nations works, General Assembly, Security Council, and how that all relates to the push for statehood by the Palestinians, which will formally be launched, apparently, at the end of the week.
Yeah.
David Bosco, who writes the Multilateralist blog for Foreign Policy magazine, is the author of Five to Rule Them All, the UN Security Council and the Making of the Modern World, and he teaches at the American University in Washington. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and coming up next, for something completely different, we will talk about agribusiness with vegetables grown in New York City. Stay with us.